The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. This is Colombia Calling, episode 209. And this week we've taken a field trip. We've got out of the house, and we're not in Mompox either. We're in Bogota, and we have, well, I guess the way to introduce him is the original listener of Columbia Calling, Stuart Oswald, yes. Here. And we're in the garden, the Juan Valdez, the back of the Museo Nacional, downtown Bogota. Very beautiful, an old prison, of course. And we're going to talk about some very curious things. I want to make this very clear from the very beginning that we are not experts in this theme, just people who've shown an interest. Sure. And let me just say that Stuart, in 2013, wrote a blog on the subject, and in 2017, only a few weeks ago, in fact, did his own podcast, which we'll link to on the Facebook page and everywhere else, about this subject as well. But it's timely, and that's why we're addressing it. And yes, we won't keep you in on tenterhooks any longer. We're going to be talking about the possibilities of Hitler in Colombia. Yes, you heard that right. That's Adolf Hitler in Colombia. But first, let's introduce Stuart, Stuart Oswald, to the show. The original listener, longtime resident in Colombia. You are a father, you're married to a Colombian, you're a chili farmer, and you work on the Panela farm in Villeta.
Yep, you got it spot on there.
So how do you end up on a Panela farm in Villeta, Stuart?
Let's go from there. So first of all, thank you very much, Richard, for inviting me over and being on your show. It's a beautiful setting. It's great to be in Bogota, up in the lofty heights of the Bogota Sabana. And how did I get here? I've been visiting Colombia now, so since 2005, 2006. I met my wife in London, and she sort of whisked me off every now and then to be with her family, see Bogota, and visit the surrounding countryside.
Mm-hmm. And she's happy to be back here, living permanently, or would she prefer to be in London?
That's the thing. I think she actually prefers London.
Yeah.
I kind of said, look, I'm married to a Colombian. What am I doing in London? I'm not doing very much. Uh-huh. I'm just doing the same old job. So I might as well use that Colombian connection and go on a big adventure. So here I am now.
Well, I think that's great. But the thing is, you know, even though she probably prefers London, I'm sure she's very happy being close to her family. Because Colombians are, you know, very family oriented.
Yeah, and we've got a young son. Yeah. So she's happy to have the boy in the school and running free in the countryside, not worrying about drug addicts and all that that you get out in the urban city.
This is true.
So it's nice just to relax a bit, enjoy the nice weather, and she can spend as much time yapping away with her family.
And of course, Villeta, it's nice. There's temperate climate. It's nice and warm there, right?
That's the thing. Now, she's fine. The boy is fine. But I am sweating 24/7.
But it's not that hot.
I'm used to damp and cold London,
yeah, fair enough.
Munich from the Alps, the cold fresh air from the Munich Alps. I'm sweating quite hard, and I actually enjoy it when there's a cloudy sky and a little bit of rain sometimes.
When it goes across.
It gives me a break from the heat.
I understand. Now tell us a little bit. We'll get, you know what, because it's so interesting that you have you kind of harvest chilies. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about those before we plunge into the main content of this episode. What are these chilies that you farm?
So these are the chilies, they're called chirca chilies, ahi chirca.
And they're spicy.
And they are very hot. You'd probably know them in the US as the newest thing would be bird's eye chilies.
Mm-hmm.
They're very small. They're not exactly like bird's eye chilies, but they're the nearest thing.
Right.
And they grow wild in Cundinamarca and other parts of Colombia.
Uh-huh.
They're very hot. They contain a lot of seeds. And for their size, they're amongst the hottest chilies in the world.
Wow. And but these grow wild.
These grow wild. Me and my wife and our family, we have some land near Vigela,
mm-hmm.
where we go and we work on panela every now and then. And my little side project is collecting these ahi chirca ahis.
Awesome. And you export them? Wow.
And I send them all around the world. We've got buyers from all the English-speaking countries, including Africa as well.
Wow.
Countries in Africa and East Asia.
I think it's phenomenal. All from your little plot of land in Villeta.
Yeah, they do tend to be Colombian expats.
Right,
however.
Right.
But I do get some English names ordering.
Cool though. I think that's excellent. I mean, we will definitely get you back on that and talk about that because that's really interesting. And of course, to a lot of my listeners, I mean, the Colombians will know what panela is, and the expats will know what panela is, but a lot of people won't know what that is. And so it's an unrefined sugar cane.
Yeah, it's basically you cut the cane, you mill it, you squeeze it out, you get all the juice out, and then you evaporate the liquid away from it, and voila, it's crystallized sugar.
And you make it into the blocks.
You form it into blocks, or you go a stage further and you make it into pulverized sugar.
Nice.
Pulverized, which is a higher price, but blocks are a lot easier.
Very cool indeed. You do certainly keep yourself busy, and we're very lucky to have you here at the very brief encounter here in Bogota.
Yeah, sure. I dabble in tourism as well and a few other things we've designed.
We all dabble in everything, I think. Exactly. We make ourselves more time. So basically, we got together because, we've been in contact for a long time now, and we're looking for an opportunity to get you on the show. But the fact that you did a podcast, and in 2013, so preempting all of this exposure in the press by 4 years about Adolf Hitler in Colombia, I think it's just interesting that we should do something timely on this because it was in the Miami Herald. I do believe it made the Washington Post. I know it made the Sun in England.
Went viral.
It went everywhere. Everyone wrote a piece about it, apart from me. I didn't really want to write about it. Anyway, I think it's really interesting. And so where does the information come from? So let's put it into context. I've got the article from the Miami Herald here, written by Josh Magnus. And let's just do a little bit of a summary. It is regarded as a historical fact that Adolf Hitler killed himself on April the 30th, 1945, when it became increasingly clear that Nazi Germany would fall to Allied forces. And then, so we have a couple of weeks ago, President Trump harping on about declassifying some CIA documents and everybody really taking an interest in what could possibly uncover about JFK.
Sure, yeah.
But what came out for this part of the world is that potentially Hitler escaped from Europe and was hiding in Colombia in 1954.
Totally unimaginable.
And I just think it's just very odd. I mean, we're looking at a space of 9 years between his so-called suicide in a bunker and being in Tunja, so the capital of Boyacá. Tunja is reasonably scenic in the old center. It's a university town, but it's not got that much going for it. So maybe it's the best place for him to hide. And we do know that there was a significant German community in Colombia. But let's go through the facts a little bit around what we know about potentially Hitler being here in Colombia. Where would you like to jump in? You've got the actual documents.
No, I've got them right in front of me here. So the telltale document here is the 17th of October, 1955. And it's basically a report, a document, a CIA document, whereby through a friend of a codenamed agent, Keim Lodi, number three, he spoke to a friend who heard from Philip Citroen, who was a resident of Maracaibo.
In Venezuela.
And he was working for the Royal Dutch Shipping Company.
Of course.
How did that happen? Yeah. And he actually started a newspaper in the town, an English language one called Maracaibo Times, with his brother.
So this is Philip Citroen.
Philip Citroen. Okay. So he was basically, whether he was boasting about it or just merely told his friend in secret, that somehow led on to this CIA informant, Crime Lodi number 3.
And Citroen was a former SS trooper. Yeah, I see that
we should keep that there. So yeah. All of these agents, all of these people here, they at some time or another were part of Nazi Germany.
Right.
So part of the government in Nazi Germany were a stormtrooper carrying out their deeds in Germany. And they somehow became reacquainted or they stayed in contact in their new lives here in South America.
So imagine there was a, if it was to be true, there must have been a support network between these high-ranking individuals in this part of the world.
Sure, sure. I mean, should mention as well that predating this, there's a rather fantastic report. It's totally outlandish. It's,
oh, this one.
In a police gazette.
Which is a bit like the National Enquirer,
it's
really,
just,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's all got pin-ups and it's all got popular stuff for boats. But they've uncovered some documents in the Colombian State Department.
And when does this date back to? 1968.
July the 2nd, 1948.
Right.
But I don't know if we can believe anything in here.
Hmm.
But they're all talking about the Germans sending over a party to make inquiries as to where Hitler might be able to flee to if he needed to, if the war ended and it all went bad for Nazi Germany. And in this report, they're actually saying that some people did reconnaissance over here in Colombia.
But it's, I mean, you know, it's not far-fetched to imagine Nazis coming to South America, because we know they did. We know that Mengele was on the border of Brazil and Paraguay.
Sure.
There were others who were funneled out through the Mercedes-Benz company that got into Argentina, and so on and so forth.
The famous Nazi hunter was hot on their heels.
Yeah, Simon Wiesenthal and stuff. And of course, then you look at the Levy, I can't remember, the book written by whomever, Boys from Brazil, which just deals with that and so on. So it's not, I mean, it's not something of lore. I mean, it did happen. And if you look at the Bolivian army at the time, they looked like a Prussian army. I mean, they have the old helmets and stuff. And even up till 1943, Colombia was more Axis affiliated until they could see that the tide was turning for the Allies. And so there was a big community here. There would have been a support network, but what do we think? I mean, what else have we got on these documents?
The theory is kind of, it's not beyond comprehension, really, to think that Hitler would have made it if he did survive. Mm. Let's just say if he did survive the Second World War and actually fled to another country around the world, he probably would have gone for South America.
Yeah.
Just given that so many other prominent Nazis actually did make it here.
Yeah.
The theory is that thousands of Nazis made it here through the rat runs of Europe, through Spain. Some of them stayed in Spain, some of them moved on. So, it's totally...
Hang on, I can see there you've got written down Klaus Barbie was in Bolivia.
That's
to
right,
France?
Bolivia, yeah, and then he got extradited back to France in 1983.
Klaus Barbie, a lot of them horrible people.
Assassinated.
By Mossad.
Mysteriously died. And
Adolf Eichmann was in Argentina.
Jeez, yeah.
Who else you got down there?
You got
I can read upside down.
Franz Stangl, he was in San Paolo.
Wow.
Gustav Wagner, the Wolf.
Brazil.
Nickname, the Wolf was in Brazil.
And they were here till 1978. I mean, we're talking about very recent dates. I know it's 2000.
Done interviews on television in Argentina and so on.
So I find this interesting because, you know, every now and then one of these stories pops up about, you know, someone like a Ukrainian guard at one of the death camps, and one in Canada, I think, or
that's
in
right,
New
yeah.
Jersey, and now being sent back. Yeah. You know, it is interesting because my father, you know, he passed away, but he lived all through this. You know, he was an 18-year-old just about to go off to war during this. And so I guess, you know, you grew up in the UK or maybe in Germany a little bit, I don't know, but I grew up in the UK and we were taught about it. It was something that was very
Second
present
World War
was a key thing. So I know that maybe I'm going to sound old. Maybe the youth of today don't understand
it's
the importance.
Such a long time ago,
you know, 1945. But what really strikes me, when I look at these articles and I look at informants and stuff, and these names, is that what would Hitler then have done in the 10 years between supposedly dying in his bunker in Berlin and then turning up in Tunja under an assumed alias? Would he have been in Franco's Spain? Would he have been in North Africa? Would he have been in Brazil? I don't know.
We can let the theory run riot here. So,
yeah.
I mean, the theory is that the conspiracy here is that Hitler fled to Argentina.
Right.
And then he somehow traveled to Tunja in Colombia in 1954.
Yeah.
And he's somehow milled around Tunja for, let's say, up to a year until January 1955.
Right.
Now, what was he doing in Colombia for, let's say, that 1 year?
It's curious.
He could have been, around that time, there was the dictator in Colombia.
Yeah.
Kind of dictator. And the funny thing is that he went to Germany during the Nazi era to acquire weapons for the Colombian military. He went there in 1936.
So, you know.
And, I don't know. I don't know too much about this dictator. Maybe you can tell, was he right-wing or left-wing?
Quite right-wing.
So there you go. So he's kind of right with him.
Gustavo Rojas Pinilla. And Gustavo Rojas Pinilla, if I'm not mistaken, I think Enrique Peñalosa is family of his. If I'm not mistaken, somewhere down the line.
Okay.
But everything is connected, as you know, between political families in Colombia. But I might be wrong.
Might be right, yeah.
But I find this fascinating. Let's take a brief pause.
John,
we'll come back. But I think we need to dwell on this, and the listeners to dwell on this. It's like, what is the likelihood of Hitler coming to Colombia and then setting up shop in Tunja? Scenic Tunja, one of the coldest parts of Colombia, outside of Bogota. So I would say probably in those days it would be half a day or a day's journey from Bogota.
And now it's still... The population maybe was about 50 to 100,000
yeah,
people.
Yeah, if that.
And my town of Vigeta's got like 20-something, so it's a quarter of my town.
And you'd stand out
being
a foreigner.
Yeah.
Because you're more going to... The Kunde Boyacenses really are going to look different from someone from... He was Austrian, Hitler, right?
Yeah, he was born Austrian.
Yeah, so anyway, but think about that. Let's take a brief pause and come back to this and discuss further the memos from the CIA and other files. Fascinating to talk about this. It's fascinating to talk about it out loud. So this is episode 209. We're talking to Stuart Oswald, who's an expat here and making, just busy on his farm in Villeta, but also interested in all sorts of things. And we're just discussing this because it's timely. So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Please don't go away. Episode 209 of Columbia Calling. Thank you for listening. Yes, we're back. This is episode 209 of Columbia Calling, and we're here in the garden, the very scenic gardens at the back of the Museo Nacional downtown Bogota. So if you're here in Bogota, of course, you should definitely visit this museo, former prison, but now, converted to something a little more cheery. And there's a Juan Valdez at the back, and that's where we find ourselves right now. I'm here with Stuart Oswald, who's a resident of Villeta, so about an hour and a half outside of Bogota, much nicer weather. He would be busy himself on the Panela farm and harvesting and exporting chilies and so on, but we're talking about, believe it or not, Adolf Hitler in Colombia. Now, as I mentioned in the first segment, it got picked up by most of the world's press because there seems to be an enduring fascination with this figure because we never saw a body, I guess. It's not like the Che Guevara on the bed in Bolivia.
He's a bad man
of
the 20th
century. Yeah, he's a bad man. But there's this fascination. So we've got to the point in 1954 and 1955, Hitler was in Tunja, so the capital of the Boyacá department, and he was under an assumed alias. And you have the assumed alias, the name there.
We've got it. So the assumed alias is Adolf Schüttelmeier.
Schüttelmeier.
Now, I don't know why he chose that name. It means Sheikh Meyer in German. Shake as in shaking, not the shake. Yeah.
Is it a common German name?
Yeah, it's not an unheard of name.
Okay.
It's a double-barreled name in a way.
Right.
Schüttel, and then Meyer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because
why he chose that. He kept his first name. Probably should have changed his first name while he was at it.
But
it,
yeah, I mean, obviously you wouldn't. But okay. But that's the thing. Now we've got this. We've got these documents. You've got released documents from the CIA, released at the same time as these Kennedy documents. And I've got this, the Miami Herald's report, and they've got this, these copies of microfilms. And I think what is the most impacting issue, not only around the whole story, is that there is a photo.
Yeah, this is it. So this is where it maybe becomes real.
Yeah.
So in the CIA document,
you can have a look at that too. We've both got copies of this photo before us.
In the CIA document, this code named Chaim Lloyd Lee. It states here that his friend surreptitiously obtained a photograph Citron referred to. So Philip Citron, which was the guy who was in close contact with Hitler on a monthly basis, he let loose that he had this picture that was taken of him and Hitler in this, let me get the name here, Residencias Coloniales in Tunja. So the picture, the setting here was actually in this residential house not far from the town square in Tunja.
So this is where he lived.
This is where Hitler is supposed to have either lived or frequented often. Now, the house is known, like the CIA report goes on and the informant goes on, is that the town and this around this house, it seems to be overpopulated by former Nazis. There seems to be loads of former SS troopers there and people doing a Heil Hitler salute and all of this nonsense.
Yeah.
And the picture is supposed to have been taken in that residence or somewhere around Tunja, maybe in a townhouse outside the town or something like that.
But it's odd. And then we talk about this guy Citron, and we come back to the photo. Citron, he says in this document that he talked to Hitler about once a month during a business trip that took him to Colombia, where he said Hitler was hiding. And he also said that Hitler was actually still alive, obviously, and that the former dictator could no longer be prosecuted as a criminal of war because it had been over 10 years since the end of World War II.
Is that true?
But
that
I don't even think that's technically true.
They're still getting people these days.
Yeah.
They hit the wrong information.
No, and he said the former German SS trooper, so Citroen, also told Simer Ludi's III's friend, so the informant, that he posed with the alleged Hitler for a photograph, which is included in the CIA memo. So this is it. So this is Citroen
on
the left, and Hitler on the right. Now, you can't doubt that this looks like Hitler, but at the same time, are we sure it's him? I mean, he's got the last... The thing about Hitler is that he shares his facial hair now with only one other person who's alive, is Mugabe. It's the last facial hair faux pas. It's a Hitler moustache. The two of them have it. But, okay, so it's a man. It's not a clear photograph.
Yeah, so it's a really bad photo. Yeah. I mean, the picture, I'm guessing, would have been a grey shaded picture, black and white, but this is just totally stark black and white.
Yeah, just a
you
copy.
You can see their white hands and their white faces and the tie and the shirts.
But you know,
but that's definitely Hitler.
He's got the moustache, but it, from images I see of Hitler, you know, giving his vast speeches and so on and so forth, and rabble rousing. From what I can see on this picture, he doesn't appear to have aged.
Yeah,
and 10 years on the run is a long time.
He has got a slightly, longer face than I remember.
Okay,
his chin's a little bit longer. He could have just been. Let's just say that this is all nonsense, and he could have just been an eccentric wannabe Hitler in Tunja, and all the former Nazis just rallied around him and just remembered the good old times.
Bizarre.
Or maybe the picture was indeed from Philip Citroen with Hitler, but not
on a different occasion.
In Colombia. Maybe it was back in Germany.
Then what would Philip Citroen have to gain by making up a rumor this?
Yeah.
But we don't know. But they're possibly about. But on the back of the image, it says Adolf Schüttelmeier.
Schüttelmeier. Yeah. And we got to go. So let's go to that picture, right? Because it's written there in hand.
Yeah.
And they spelled Colombia wrong. They spelled it with a U. And they spelled Tunja wrong. They spelled it with a G instead of a J. And then it says here, America del Sur. So there's something in Spanish there. But if they know Spanish, they would have written Colombia right as well.
Right.
And that's 1954.
So
right now, the theory, I don't know, you either believe it or you reject it. if you believe it, then Hitler's alive and he's in Colombia, and he leaves later on in January
55
to make his way back to
Argentina.
Or we could elaborate a bit more on this residencias, where I've just found from a local historian that there were actually, it was indeed a focal point of Germans. Now, I don't want to cast, you know, a black, you know, tar brush all over the Germans living in Tunja. That doesn't mean by any means that they're descendants from Nazis or anything. Let's not get into that.
No.
But there were Germans in Tunja, notable Germans, and they were centered. They were focusing their time and their energies on this residencias coloniales.
Mm.
So we found a couple, Vicente Edes,
right,
and his wife,
Mrs. Edes.
Mrs. Edes. I don't have a name for her, but they're recorded to have been residing in this residencias coloniales. They resettled from Germany after the war, around 47, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
Now, the wife was noted as being beautiful and elegant. Maybe that's what everyone thought of her. Maybe she has blonde hair, blue eyes, and they just never saw anyone like that before. And she used to wear a notable beret and a long black coat.
Okay.
And she wore through the town of Tunja. Now, the thing is, this all ended in tragedy when she killed herself near the Republic Bank, which was a Republic Bank in Tunja, a few blocks away from Residencia Coloniales. And the reason was is that her husband suffered from, if I term this correctly, post-traumatic stress during his time in the war in Germany.
Okay.
So
that's that.
They were Germans,
one
and they
family.
Were residing there, and they had a link to Germany during the war.
And who else?
Then there's just one more, Julius Sieber. Now, he was born in Friedrichshafen, which is southwest Germany, 1892. He's an educator, and he moved before the war to Germany, and he sort of set up home in Tunja, and he started a school, a boys' school. And then during the Third Reich, he went back. He got his calling, and he went back in 1936, and he took up a government job.
Huh.
And he stayed in Germany until 1947 as well. And then he returns.
Returns to Colombia again.
Returns to Colombia, returns right back to Tunja, goes back to his school which he founded. And the really weird thing here is that he changed the school's insignia to resemble a black eagle.
The Nazi black eagle.
Yeah. Now, I mean, in Germany we still use eagles, on the passports and so on, nothing like stuff like that. But it just seems odd that he's...
It seems odd that it's noted as well. It's something that's been noticed. That's why it's been noted down. No, I just think it's very odd. Well, of course, 1947 Tunja, I think, is going to be more comfortable than 1947 Berlin.
Oh, definitely.
with all that's gone on. But it's just very odd. I think the only way to really investigate this, and I don't know if I've got time or the will to do so, but it's to investigate these fringe people further. Julius Sieber and... the Edes family. I think they would be the ones who'd see if there were any connections through the Residencias Coloniales to the Adolf Schüttelmeier or Adolf Hitler being there. It seems very odd to me, but we kind of bring this up. Why is this now a theme that people are talking about? Well, there's an Argentine journalist, specialist in it, he's made his name about it, called Abel Basti, who's written a book called Tras los Pasos de Hitler, which is more or less means, you know, in the footsteps of Hitler. And it tracks the alleged movements of Hitler throughout South America and more specifically in Colombia. But how can you write a full book about hearsay I guess he would say that the photograph is conclusive evidence, but I would say, well, I look at that photograph, we don't know if it's from 1954 really, we don't know if it wasn't taken in Germany beforehand or in Venezuela or in Brazil. For me, not to talk down a book, because I'll probably buy it anyway in the book fair next year, because I know he's coming up to launch it there. It seems odd to write a whole book about what might have been 1 year of Hitler's life. Now, he wasn't only in Tunja, was he? He spent time in Bogotá.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and this author, Abu Basti, he'll go all out on this. He's actually posted a picture on Twitter about it outside a house not very far from here in the in a neighbouring barrio to where we are.
Yeah, in Teosaquillo. Which is a very nice area, and they've got huge sprawling mansions which have been, you know, renovated into university buildings, into offices, because families really can't maintain a house of that size. It's too much money. But the house is still standing. It's an ornate house right in a very obvious part of it. It's got sort of green and red balconies and very, very nice. But people said they used to remember there being like guards there was some sort of mention of there being guards outside, and everyone was like, but why in 1954 would you have guards outside your house? So it gives rise to, again, we can go on about conspiracy theories, but we don't want to be seen as the madmen. Let's do someone else do the research and we can just talk about it. I think it's very odd. I think, why not? But then, you know, and then I want to just say about this Miami Herald article, because it does very well at summing it all up. And he says, you know, there was additional controversy surrounding Hitler's death in 2009. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, when U.S. researchers say they conducted a DNA test for an hour on what the Russian government claimed was a skull fragment from the German dictator. The researchers found it belonged to, and they quote, a woman between the ages of 20 and 40. So it just sort of shows that there's always some sort of mystique around this figure. Is he under the rubble in Berlin? I think so.
You don't know. Even President Eisenhower in 1952, he stated that there was no evidence that Hitler actually died in his bunker.
There you go. So I like to do a little bit of think outside the box in this one. And if we think of 1954, 1955 Colombia, so how his life would have been. He wouldn't have left the house particularly often. If he left the house, either one, in Residencias Coloniales in Tunja or the one here in Teosaquillo, he would have done so.
He would have been, totally
maybe
isolated.
In disguise or under cover of darkness. Yeah. He may have gone to the German club or something.
That's true, yeah. Met his Nazi friends here and there in the country houses.
But then beyond that, what would you have done? I mean, was he planning, you know, like is it the Michael Harris book, the Fatherland book?
There's rumour that he wanted to set up the Third Reich here in Latin America, all that.
Well, who knows? I mean, what else have you got on these documents here, Stuart, that maybe we can talk about? Because it's very, I mean, I find it really interesting that there is this link. And I think it's, but I just don't know. I think it's a bit of a dead end.
That's my thoughts on it. This is what I was saying before. You either believe it, you reject it, or you just say, hey, I don't know, and wait for some more evidence. The thing is, getting this noted in a CIA document.
Yeah.
Having all the circumstantial evidence, of the informants, the Citroën, the visits monthly, Hitler, the big conspiracy theories that Hitler went to Argentina, the potion here in South America would have been sort of accepting towards Hitler in some form or another with dictators and politicians and movements and the remoteness of South America. See, there's places, you know, in Vigera even that are, you know, there's country houses that I don't know who lives in there. Yeah. Who lives in those places?
Yeah, and there's a big German influence in Colombia from those years and prior to those, as I've spoken before of Montbos, and the forefather of Colombian cattle farming, Taichen, and he was from Bremen. Yeah. And of course, there is a blacklist of names of Germans, Japanese, and Italians resident in Colombia during World War II who had their lands, sort of like two-thirds of their, or everything they owned, was taken by the government. And most of them ended up going back to Germany after that because they had been humiliated. And of course, they were, again, I know you've got the notes there, they were held in a hotel outside of Bogota in a town called Fusagasuga, which is on the way if you're going to the resort towns of Girardot and Melgar, or if you're going to but it's the Hotel Sabaneta, I believe, which doesn't exist anymore.
But as you say, it's a cement factory.
It's a cement factory or a cement warehouse. Only one wall of the old hotel exists, but it's referred to as an internment camp, and it was an internment camp in that people were there against their will, but it doesn't resemble anything like we remember from Germany 1945, etc. It's not like the extermination camps. They were held against the will. The Japanese were largely held in the town of Corinto, which is near to where their primary settlements were, in Cauca. And a lot of them went back. There is still a small population in Cali. There's a Japanese foundation there which still talks about it. But they look, and apart from that, it's very interesting. But it's not a spoken about history in Colombia, particularly.
The funny thing is that we're all talking about far right Germans. they were actually people fleeing Nazi Germany. So Germans that were maybe communists and such, or Jews looking at getting out of Nazi Germany and making a new home in South America. So it wasn't just the far right, it was other Germans, notable politicians as well.
Who have
Antonio Navarro Wolf as well, who's
far left.
So you've got all sorts coming here. It wasn't just Nazi Germans.
In your time here, coming back and forth, have you come across any other like really, really German names?
No, to be honest. Not myself. No, not in my town. No.
I met someone called Nobman the other day. Nobmann.
That's kind of a joke.
Yeah, and I thought it was too. And she was Costeña as well. I mean, it was like from Barranquilla, but her name was Vidmeric. Well, I won't say it on the. But Nobman was the surname, and she said yes, it was from German descent. So.
And you've got other Germans. You've got. The founder of the Bavarian Brewery,
right,
was a German Jew, so I don't think Hitler would have been drinking any of his beer.
Avianca,
yeah, and Avianca as
well. Skatta. And one of the first pilots for Avianca, who died in a crash near Hiraldot, had actually flown with the Red Baron, and I can't remember his name. That's a real link to Germany there, isn't it? He'd actually flown with the Red Baron. No, I've done research and other things in the past about this, but it's this whole thing about Hitler has brought it back to the fore, and I just think it very odd. I really do. I personally am very skeptic.
We need to find his body.
But this is not to say that I don't find it fascinating. And the CIA decided to spend some time on the case means that they weren't throwing any, they weren't throwing caution into the wind. They went, this needs to be researched. So that's in itself says something. The CIA, I mean, they've got access to however much information
that
we have.
They've got all their stations all across South America.
And then, of course, you've got, if you look into the 1950s, when did Plan Condor come about? And all of this, when the Americans really started helping out sort of right-of-center governments against the communist threat. I think it's probably later when we're looking at Galtieri, Videla in Argentina, and prior to them, and of course, Pinochet in Chile. Yes, of course, because that's like 65, right?
So there's a whole proxy Cold War going
and
on.
And the Banzer in Bolivia and others. But I think it's still 10 years too early for the CIA to have too much information in Colombia, isn't it?
They copied it into other stations, Caracas, Bogota, and Buenos Aires.
It's interesting. It's interesting, but I don't know if it's complete. So what do they conclude?
The CIA conclude that this is just a... They conclude that it's a fanciful sort of conspiracy or something or other, and they said you shouldn't waste any more time on it. That's what he said. Whether the conspiracy again going on, whether they were defending him or something like that, I don't know.
So, though I ask this of you, Stuart, will you spend any further time on this?
I'm probably, I'm not a, I don't idolize him or anything like that, don't get me wrong, but I'm probably going to pay a little visit to Tunja and have a look at the house.
The Residencias Coloniales.
Where he killed herself, so. That's probably as far as I'm going
to
take it.
When you do, take some photos, send them to us, or put them on a blog, and we'll link to it so people can see. Because I know that this episode is going to be very popular because it's just so... It's bizarre, really.
Yeah,
it's just
we've
bizarre.
We've gone to and fro here. We're not convinced ourselves.
I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. But who knows? I mean, without spending real time in Tunja and meeting some of the older generations... Do they still even exist? I don't know.
It's fascinating to talk to someone.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's your homework. I have to go to the National Archives before long, so I'll take another look back in there. But I don't think this, you know, given the bureaucracy here and how they kept paperwork in the past, it would be a needle in a haystack if I were to find anything and be really amazing otherwise. But I don't think so. So I hope you've enjoyed this podcast today, episode 209. In truth, I've really enjoyed chatting about it.
Thank you.
It's been fun. No, it's been fun because we've been back and forth, but we've been talking about something that's, of, let's say, universal interest, I think, and there's a sort of almost mystique and mythology around it. And, well, we've come here with the facts. Listeners, what do you think? Get in touch, you know, leave a message on the Facebook page or of course, send us an email, columbiacalling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter as well, at Columbia Calling. I answer all emails and I love to get them. And any feedback is always well appreciated. And if you have anyone you think should be interviewed, let me know. This week, we've had as a very special guest on the show. It's my original listener. Right from day one, Stuart Oswald. So there's a big thank you to Stuart for being a long-term believer in Columbia Calling. It's flattering to have listeners, and I will link, of course, to Stuart's podcast about the Hitler story and to his blog from 2013, so you guys can make up and form decisions for yourselves. This is Richard McCall for Columbia Calling, signing off today, this episode 209 with Stuart Oswald, and again, thank you for listening. It's been a real pleasure. Bye-bye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.